Chapter 3 Shiban reached the blast doors to the bridge, crouched low, and waved Yiman forwards. His battle brother sprinted ahead, clamped three crack grenades to the hairline between the door's adamantium plates, and set them to blow in sequence. Yiman retreated as the rest of the Arban fell back, taking cover behind a line of low support frames 5 meters from the clicking charges. Explosions kicked out, shattering the door's locking mechanism and denting the heavy plates inwards. Shiban moved instantly, clutching his guandao two-handed, but he was not the fastest. Jochi, Yiman, and two others beat him to it, reveling in pure enhanced muscle rather than the hybrid mechanisms their Khan now employed.
"For the Khagan!"
Jochi whooped as he smashed his way through the jagged-edged gap, firing his bolt pistol. Shards spun and bounced as Shiban followed him in. Beyond the portal, the bridge opened up in a fog of flickering lumen strips. It ran for 100 meters, rising slightly towards a crystal flex observation dome at the far end. Deep pits fell away on either side, crammed with terrified mortals and chittering servitors. Projectile fire skipped from the gantries that spanned the drop, aimed poorly by nervous hands. The bulk carrier's defenders were not even of the caliber of regular Imperial Army troopers. If Shiban had not been encased in his superlative armor, he would still have had little to fear from such ill-directed shots. By now, Jochi was nearing the observation platform. Shiban followed close on his heels, feeling the metal decking flex under his weight.
"Preserve the shipmaster," he voxed.
Bolt-round echoes rang across the arch-roofed interior. Two warriors had leapt down into the pits and were slashing through the hordes with their curved blades. Two more had vaulted up into the heights, defying the weight of their armor to clamber into the metal spars that sheltered the snipers. Cogitator lenses shattered, throwing fizzing sheaves of crystal over the decking. The air rang with the stink of cordite, human fear, and burst lubricant cables. Shiban reached the platform under the dome. 23 corpses greeted him, each one felled by a single precision shot. Jochi stood guard over the slumped cadavers, his armor barely dented, scanning around for anything still living. Others of the Arban fanned out, still hunting, thirsting for more blood to wet their blades. Two crew members had been spared. The mortal shipmaster, a woman, was on her knees, trembling. Her navigator stood beside her, unafraid. Shiban stooped, lifting the shipmaster's fleshy chin with a single finger.
"Where are you bound?" he asked.
"The Narrows," she blurted, eyes wide. "My lord."
"I am not your lord. What is your cargo?"
"We did not..."
"What is your cargo?"
The woman looked briefly lost, her pupils flickering from the armored giant towering over her to the other ones who rampaged across her bridge.
We do not..."
Shiban let her chin fall and turned to the navigator, who bowed floridly.
"A privilege to witness you fight, Khan," he said. "My name is Carvelli. We carry nutrient supplies, battle-grade rations for 9 army regiments in service of the 3rd Legion. Some infantry weapons, ground attack craft, heavy assault gear. The remainder from standard supply ledgers, Medicare equipment, parts, machine tools. Little of great import. In truth, I am surprised you came for it."
Shiban studied the old man. The navigator would be allowed to live, for such rarities were never killed needlessly. It sickened him, for the agents of the Navis Nobilitae were employed by both sides of the war, untouchable even in treachery, their lives protected both by ancient precedent and the practical necessity of warp travel. The convoy would have 20 of such mutants on duty, at least one for each bulk carrier, and all would be preserved. Perhaps many of them had already served the loyalist cause before. Perhaps none had.
"How soon before you power your engines to full?"
Shiban asked. Cavelli tilted his head in what might have been an apology.
"As I was telling Shipmaster Kulba, it will be some time until all ships are prepared."
"You have 1 hour. Get to work, and I will have additional requirements."
Cavelli bowed again, then stiffened suddenly.
"Of course, we may not have that long."
Even as he spoke, Shiban received the same data over his comm feed. He switched to the wide-range tactical augers and picked up idents from all the units fighting in the battlesphere. Every bulk carrier had been boarded, and every enemy crew had been immobilized. The last of the defense pickets were being run down, and the two White Scars frigates had pulled in close to the void wake of the convoy to receive the fighters again. But that was not all. Warp signatures had registered on the edge of sensor range, a dozen of them, coming in tight, skirting the very edge of safe Mandeville tolerance. Jochi stomped back across the command platform.
They are here.
Shiban nodded, trying to gauge how long they had, what numbers were incoming, how best to marshal the forces given to him. The margins were getting tighter, the response times faster, the windows for operation slimmer.
This is still my ship, came Kulba's tremulous voice.
Shiban turned to see the shipmaster standing defiantly, her chin wobbling a little, a bead of sweat running down her cheek. She had not drawn a weapon, but her fists were balled in her gloves, and she had placed herself between Shiban and the command throne. There was something noble in that. From the earliest days on Chogoris, when Shiban had been Tamu, and the boundary of his existence had been the sky and the earth beneath it, he had always admired defiance. His bolt round hit her in the chest before she had even seen him draw the weapon. Kulba hit the back of the throne with a wet thud and sprawled across its arms, by which time Shiban was already moving, sliding his bolter back into its lock position, ignoring the slick of blood that spread from the throne's base.
"Secure the navigators," he ordered, switching to the Arbenz channel. "And look to the engines, as ordered."
A crackling comburst brought in more information. Emperor's children war vessels, as precisely configured as they had ever been, in numbers. So this encounter would be the test Yashugai had promised him it would be.
"Then make them fight,"
he commanded, knowing that every warrior in the Brotherhood was primed and ready.
"Blood them deep, for they are the Oathbreakers, the destroyers of the dream."
He activated the Guandao's energy field again and felt it surge within him, the savage, sharp anticipation of killing that now only came from taking on his own kind.
"For the Khan," he breathed. "For the Emperor!"
The attackers came in primed for combat. If they had expected to find the Kalium Gate unprotected, its defences denuded to provide cover for the diversionary raids choreographed at Memnos and nine other scattered sites, they gave no sign of it. The main assault was led by the Dictatus-class battleship Lance of Heaven, one of the Legion's core war vessels, the veteran of a dozen major engagements since they had learned about Istvan. Its flanks were no longer spotless ivory, its lines no longer purest blood red. Old plasma burns now ran along the length of its charred gunwales, patched up by hasty battlefield repairs and marred by repeat impacts. Its thrusters were black from incessant overburning, its bridge disfigured with the brown patina of lance-scorched residue. The only part of it that was kept undefiled was the great icon high up on the ship's crown that bore the Legion sigil. The lightning strike, the vengeance of heaven. That image was restored after every encounter, picked out in rarest gold and floodlit across its heavy armor plate, for there would be no deception, no attempt to run silent or defy martial honor.
"We are the Fifth Legion. We are the Ordu of Jagatai, the White Scars of Chogoris. We are the Oath Keepers."
A million souls had died under the sigil's gaze in 4 long years of vicious fighting, each one dying with the gold and red of heaven reflected in their eyes. It had once been a joyous proclamation, an exotic statement of freedom amid the juggernaut of imperial conformity. Now its aspect was bloody and furious, the mirror of the forgotten barbarian souls who etched it on stone, steel, and hide. 7 more warships emerged in the Lance of Heaven's wake. The Naman, Kamanog, Bloodline, Celestian, Fate's Arrow, Umal, Ko'ama, all variants of the Legiones Astartes battlecruiser, each heavily refitted, altered, patched up, wounded, so much so that their original Martian classifications had ceased to deliver much meaningful information about their capabilities. The Umal had once been the Tenacious, a Death Guard linebreaker. The Celestian had not changed name, but had belonged to a Wordbearer's compliance formation. The white war paint was thin on both those vessels, scraped over hulls that had once borne the liveries of different masters. The others had always been Fifth Legion. All seven ships stayed tight to the centrally placed Lance of Heaven, powering towards the necklace at full tilt, their shields glittering. Escorts radiated out from the attack axis, destroyers, gun frigates, missile boats, eschewing protection for the punch of unleashed speed. Every movement was deliberate, taken at high velocity, mapped to deliver the most intense shock hit of ordnance before a counter could be organized. 4 years ago, such tactics had reaped ruin on the Warmaster's advance. Accustomed only to the ragged assaults of Istvan's hollowed-out dupes, the traitors had taken time to adjust to the Khan's more orchestrated counteroffensive. The Death Guard had suffered particularly badly, unable to match the void mastery of the Fifth Legion, but all of them, Fulgrim's chem-addicted sensation seekers, Perturabo's obsessive engineers, Mortarion's grim footsloggers, even the sons of Horus themselves had taken their share of pain. But that was 4 years ago. Every legion was a living thing, gifted with commanders of infinite subtlety and tactical understanding. The Death Guard refined their fleet strategy, bringing to bear greater firepower against the Khan's wild riders. The Iron Warriors gave their fleet enough heavy physical anti-ship protection to turn their attackers into great lumps of plasma-laced slag. The Sons of Horus did what they always did, responding with such concentrated brutality and directed discipline that the two legions, once close in understanding and sympathy, became blood-sworn in antipathy through accumulated atrocity. The Emperor's children had learned just as fast, and from their positions at Kalium, they recognized the Chogorian deployment of the false spear. They knew that the Lance of Heaven and its escorts were not as all-powerful as they appeared, and that the more ephemeral wings of destroyers and frigates had been loaded beyond design capacity. They knew that to meet the main charge with equal force would invite disaster, and that they had to respond to the full spectrum of the incoming flotilla, just as spread out, just as fast. And so they did. The Proudheart, the battlegroup's flagship, equal in displacement and heritage to the Lance of Heaven, emerged from the shadow of the Keystone with its cruiser-class escorts, the Mortal Splendor, Excessive, Infinite Variety, and Aquiline. These heavy warships were outnumbered by the Fifth Legion formation bearing down on them, but bolstered by the defensive emplacements on the Keystone and Necklace. Fixed cannon batteries opened up, spiraling, glowing lines of armor-rending shells into the battlesphere. Threading through the spider's web of coruscation came the Emperor's children escorts, each one prepared and engine-keyed for rapid attack maneuvers. For the space of a human breath, the void between the two fleets remained intact, scored by projectile trails as silent as the grave, bounded by movement, but pristine. Long-range guns opened fire. Shield generator crews placed their last power feeds into immense promethium coils. Bridge pilots made their final calculations of distance, heft, mass, and velocity. Then the gap closed. Shells slammed into armor plate. Lasfire raked across the void. Assault boats slammed into hull lines. Lance beams fizzed home. Bulkheads smashed, plasma conduits exploded, armor glass shattered, spine ridges shook with impacts, transverse bracing dented. Vast blooms of fire lit up the void, punched through by more spears of iridescence. The flanks of the Keystone turned red, banishing the void's eternal shadow as the power of suns was kindled and let fly. The ships became cauldrons of fire, ringed about by focal webs of destruction. Smaller vessels screamed around those nodes, hammering out their payloads. Mortal cries rang out, thousands strong, unheard over the claustrophobic tumult within each vessel, but relished in the deeper geometry of the immaterium beyond. And so again, the Abyss witnessed the raging death of Aeon machines, as the finest of humanity set about, with the perfect efficiency they had ever been gifted with, destroying themselves in the fires of choler, ambition, and vengeance. Kario entered the restraint cage of the boarding torpedo, placed his sword in its steel casing, and felt shackles descend to press against his armor. The other four warriors of his unit were already in their places ahead of him, each one a dark profile against the subdued lumen strips. Before the coffin lid of the torpedo hissed closed, he noted the deployment of the suzerain's menials, their eyelids sewn shut and their movements governed by spatial cogitator stimuli. He watched the other torpedoes along the rack take on their payloads, and counted every one of his brothers as they took their places. Most were like he was, still arrayed in the old armor of Chemos, their outlines much as they had been from the very start, sigils unaltered, blades straight, gold-polished. Even among his brothers, though, the changes were beginning. A ceramite panel here, a helm lens there, a frozen scream imprinted onto a vox communication, a sheen of never-dry blood glossing a breastplate. It would come. Their gene father's mutation would spread like poison in a wound, and they would all become half-breeds, caught between the physical and the demonic. But not yet. Not while mortal perfection had yet to be achieved, the cleanest kill, the most perfect agony. The coffin lid clamped shut, and Kario closed his eyes.
"For the beloved Primarch," he said softly,
speaking by closed vox to the shadowy outlines within the boarding torpedo chassis, as well as those in the other tubes,
"that we remain worthy of his immortal trust."
From outside the torpedo, he heard the clangs of blast doors closing, followed by lifter hooks retracting. A boom and whine of escaping air was replaced by silence from beyond the confines of his armor. Just the thud, thud of his hearts, and the low pull of his breathing.
"In this thing, as in all things, be artful."
The torpedo's interior went pitch dark, and its chassis shivered as the rail took it, clattering out to the launch mechanisms at the hull's edge.
"These are our savage cousins. Bleed them, just as in ages past we bled the dead to preserve the living."
Kario felt the torpedo shift onto the ignition track and braced himself for the sudden surge of speed. Just as he did so, he heard the old whisper again, dancing around the inside of his helm. The muscles of his left shoulder twitched, and he saw the flicker of an old image chase across his visual field. A horned creature, immense, seductive, beckoning him onwards, curling a long black tongue across fleshy lips of purest pink.
"But not yet." "So, we remain now what we have ever been," he said, banishing the spectres with a mental command. "The true and only children of the Emperor."
The torpedo's engines ignited, and the chassis exploded into straight-line speed. Kario was thrown back against the restraint cage and relaxed his body, letting his power armor take the strain. He felt the sudden shift in trajectory as the torpedo left the hull and plummeted down towards the battle plane. It was jerked sideways violently by some huge detonation, then slewed hard back towards the attack run trajectory. Data cascaded down his inner helm display, recording the progress of the entire Brotherhood. He watched dispassionately as the torpedo-bearing Brother Ramada's squad was taken out by heavy bolter fire from a 5th Legion gunship, and equally dispassionately as the same gunship was flayed by a vicious salvo from the suzerain's close defense grid. He could trace the progress of the entire engagement through that data, the hulking cargo vessels attempting to pull clear to enter the warp, the two White Scars frigates harrying the incoming fleet, the 9 ships of his own legion closing in inexorably to prevent the convoy's escape. Then the torpedo reached its target, and everything smeared into a juddering crash of static. Kario was shunted forwards, rocking as the torpedo punctured through plates the width of a man's arm and careened onwards through a fusing mass of melting deck plates. Even before it had finished its grinding progress, Kario activated the release rune. Melter blisters on the torpedo's outer flank ignited, burning a cocoon clear around it. The internal lumens switched on, and the shackles of the restraint cage snapped free. The coffin lid slammed back, ushering in a howling flood of heat laced with the smell of burning metal, and the palatine blades sprang from their transport. Karia retrieved his sword, mouthed the word of blessing over the long steel edge, and rose from the torpedo's rocking corpse. His helm display instantly switched from the wide-angle assault range to an interior tactical readout, isolating the positions of his brothers and marking their ingress routes. He shoved aside a burning spar and hauled his way clear of the torpedo's wreckage. Behind lay a long gouge in the bulk carrier's outer hull, terminated by a smouldering ring framing the naked void. Ahead was a contorted mass of broken struts and the flame-wreathed discharge of escaping oxygen. The squad of Palatine blades strode through it, cutting out with sword edge where the path was blocked. They reached an intact transit passage with working void hatches and closed the seals, cutting out the tempest. They met up then with a second five-man squad and started to run, their long swords crackling. The twin kill teams passed into the bulk carrier's sepulchral interior, watching the feedback energy snarls from their disruptor fields flare up into the darkness above. As he sprinted, Karia watched the support columns soar away, towering above container stacks over 500 meters high. They reached a lifter shaft that ran into the heights, still operative, but exposed. They ignored the turbo platforms and clamped onto the inner drive tracks, climbing them hand over hand. They ascended quickly, gaining the approaches to the bridge without firing a shot or using a blade. Only towards the end, as they crested the shaft's summit and blasted through sealed environment barriers, did any sign of the recent carnage show itself. They went watchfully then, going stealthily from bulkhead to bulkhead, swords held ready. Karia remained at the forefront, the hairs on the back of his arms rising with anticipation. A long, wide chamber ran away from them, studded with branching portals every 5 meters. On either side, bodies lay in piles on the decking, heaped together carelessly under the rows of arches, their limbs bent double and their unseeing eyes gaping up towards the vaulted roof. The narrow lumens flickered, leaving deep shadows to fester in the perma-dark. The Palatine blades silently adopted a diamond formation, Karyo at the leading tip, followed by the sub-prefector of the second squad, Avana Rolla. Haman was next, followed by the rest, with taciturn Euralius covering the rear. Their helm lenses sent pools of light rippling over the heaped corpses in the vaults, exposing motley expressions of terror, surprise, shock, nausea. The bulk carrier's crew had been slaughtered far beyond what was necessary to control the ship, then shoved out of the way like slabs of meat. Karyo studied the Orspec scans ahead. At the end of the chamber, a stairway rose to meet a braced pair of doors bearing the rusted griffin emblem of the Memnos Combine. Beyond that was hard to gauge, but he detected heat sources and movement, and the trace signal of energy weapons. Without breaking stride, he issued battle signals to his brothers, and the diamond gave way to a double line. The first squad would hit the doors, destroying them and laying down penetrating fire. Those five would give way quickly as the return volleys came in, but their screening would allow the second rank to storm the chamber beyond, where they could deploy their true strength, the Charnable Sabre, aristocrat of blades. Karyo paused at the foot of the stairway, bolt pistol in one hand, ready to give the command. Just as he was about to act, his eye was caught by a face in the shadows to his right. He turned his head a fraction and saw a mortal woman's body atop a corpse pile. She had been killed by a blunt blow, leaving most of her features intact. A spark of unease suddenly struck him.
"Fall back,"
he managed to say, before the chamber exploded in bolt of fire. Karyo threw himself to the deck, feeling the hard thumps of rounds against his armor. He scrabbled forwards, staying low, firing blind with his bolt pistol. His brothers were all doing the same thing, scattering out from the center of the chamber, trying to find cover, returning fire as best they could. Raphael was not moving, his body riddled with bolter impact craters and several others registered hits. Karyo broke for the stairway, trying to orientate himself. They needed to get out of the chamber's open ground and fight their way towards the vaults where the bodies lay in their heaps. But that was impossible. The bolt of fire was coming from the corpses. He reached the lowest steps, twisted around, and wedged himself up against the near side railing, firing steadily. All around him, stonework smashed and buckled, throwing a screen of dust into the gloom of the chamber. White scars were emerging now, pushing aside the corpses they had hidden under, their armor streaked with gore sheen, their bolters pumping. Another of Kario's squad went down, pulverized by the weight of incoming fire. But the shock had faded. Kario's squad fought back, keeping their discipline. Their armor absorbed the bulk of the hits, just as it had been designed to, giving them precious seconds to fight their way towards cover. He pushed clear of the stairway again, weaving out of the path of more shells, picking out a blood-armored White Scars legionary amid the wheeling shadows. There were 9 of them in total. Even with 2 of his own squad down, those were odds he could live with.
"You do not know who you are taking on," he thought,
closing into blade range. The warrior he advanced upon fell back, switching to his own curved sword. Kario hit him on the downward sweep, letting the weight of the saber carry it into contact. The two blades snarled together, dragging a line of sparks down the cutting edge. His enemy responded well, moving quickly, letting the impact subside. They traded more blows, their swords whirling, clanging on the strikes and flexing away. It took 5 strikes for Kario to gain the measure of the legionary. He feinted left, just a fraction, playing on his opponent's marginal pull the other way, waited for the conscious correction, spun out of the contact, and lunged point forward. The tip of his saber blazed as it slid under the breastplate, delving into his enemy's stomach and slicing clean through tissue. The warrior staggered, trying to keep his footing. But by then, Kario had already withdrawn the blade, hauled it round and whipped it across, decapitating the warrior and sending his helm bouncing bloodily across the deck. He was about to launch into the melee further down the chamber when the doors at the top of the stairway jutted open and a figure in steel-grey plate bearing a disruptor-shrouded combat glaive powered through the gap. This one's movements were different, jerkier, with machine-heavy strength behind them. Recognizing the master of those he fought, Kario saluted in the old fashion, a swift lowering of the blade before guard was taken once more.
"Brave to remain in safety while your warriors die," he said.
His enemy lumbered into close range, swinging for the strike. All across the long chamber, bolt rounds continued to snap and boom, punctuated by the rasp and ring of blades in contact.
"You come too late,"
the glaive wielder said, his voice heavily accented with strange rhythms across the Gothic words.
"These ships will soon be in the warp."
Kario made his final assessment, drinking in information from the way his opponent carried himself, the tenor of his speech, the 100 subtle signs that gave away strength and weakness.
"Then let us not waste the chance," he said,
grinning under his helm mask.
"Show me what I came here to best."